This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, spending the hour today with 96-year-old Augie Chavez of Visalia, California. While visiting him at the Walnut Park Senior Living Community there, I got him an application for Honor Flight, so hopefully he's going to be headed to Washington, D.C. soon to see the National World War II Memorial. And wherever you're listening today, there is an Honor Flight hub near you, so I hope that you'll tell all the World War II veterans in your life about this opportunity for a trip of a lifetime that's absolutely free for them. Where I live here in Central California, it was really exciting to announce this past week that Central Valley Honor Flight will add another flight of 75 World War II veterans taking off in October from the historic runway at what used to be Castle Air Force Base in Atwater. We're about 2 months away from that, so if you'd like to help in the effort, let me know. Just email me, paul@hometownheroesradio.com. HometownHeroesRadio.com is where you can find more info about Mr. Chavez and see some photos of this amazing 96-year-old. Let's get back to his story now. Five campaigns in the Pacific. So many of your friends were wounded or even killed, but you were never wounded. Is that hard for you to believe? Because you certainly beat the odds, didn't you?
Oh, yes, very much. Not even get wounded, because I've seen guys wounded two or three times. The man that married my niece when we came home, he was wounded. One time I asked him, I says, Frank, I says, you know, the reason why I kept going all the time is because I didn't want you to think I was a coward. He says, well, how do you think I felt?
All those places that you were, and I know you were fighting for your country, but I'm sure it occurred to you at some point that these islands that you're fighting on, there are people there whose freedom was at stake also. Did you ever have much of a chance to interact with the native inhabitants of any of those islands or the Filipinos when you got to places like Panay and Luzon?
Very much. Anytime we went through a town, you know, I'd see a little girl or a little boy, and instead of consuming my chocolate bar, you know, I'd give it to him or give him an apple or whatever I had, you know, because I felt sorry for him. And they were very grateful. They were grateful. The Filipinos treated us very royally. We were very fortunate in the Philippines, even though my wish would have been to go into Europe. But, well, things were planned different. So I wandered out in the Pacific for 3 years.
What's the worst thing you ever ate or out of desperation had to choose to eat in all those years fighting in these jungles?
Well, I would say old C rations and K rations. And one time when our supply lines got cut off in New Guinea, 2 weeks, well, each one had one can of salmon in their pack. And we ate a couple of bites of that each day, once a day, to survive. And then finally, when the mess trucks came by the time I got there, the cream of wheat was cold, the powder eggs were cold, the dehydrated potatoes were cold, and the pancakes were cold, and that's the best meal I've ever had in my life.
It's all about perspective, isn't it? And you certainly had a different one there. I know some of these questions aren't easy to answer and they're not fun to talk about, but you shared what you think your closest call was. And maybe it's the same answer on this one, maybe not. If you think back through all those experiences, was there one time where you think you were the most frightened, the most scared, or the most concerned that you might not make it back to Woodlake?
When we first landed in Luzon, we were the first wave. I was carrying a tripod, and when I hit the beach for about 8 or 10 seconds, my legs wouldn't function. I froze because all the heavy fire from the Navy that was ahead of us, so we could advance, you know. I don't know why, but my legs wouldn't move. But after a while, I justified myself, and I'd done real well.
What do you think it was that finally kicked in for you, that freed you from that paralysis?
Justification of the situation. You knew that you had to go forward, and you saw your buddies going forward, so you gave yourself courage.
Do you remember where you were when you found out that Japan had surrendered?
I was at home with a bad case of malaria. Otherwise, I'd have been in San Francisco celebrating, because, boy, they had a celebration in San Francisco. But anyway, that's where I was, because they surrendered about 3 months after I was discharged.
Well, let's talk about that first then. Getting that news that you were going to get to come home.
It was such a rejoicing in your heart, because you didn't think you'd come back, you know. when we went overseas, we knew that the world was in its embryonic stages, and we were on the advance. The enemy was already situated in every island that we took, every place we went, they were set up good, you know. I didn't think that I'd come back, but when I did find out that I was coming home, it was hard to believe. It was a realistic situation that you didn't expect.
And you mentioned malaria, obviously something you got fighting in the jungles there. But like so many other Pacific veterans, it was something you dealt with long after you came home, right?
I would get probably sick about every 3 or 4 months. I'd have a relapse. It took about 2 years to get rid of it. And finally, Dr. Milligan, he says, I'm not going to charge you, but I'm going to experiment on you. And he done the best job for me, and I got rid of it. And here I am, 96 years old, and I'm still able to. I have my mind, and I have my voice. But other than that, there's a few things that are coming apart.
Well, you could have fooled me. So you're back home, you endure that malaria until the doctor helps you get over it. But what about that news that Japan surrendered? You're here, you didn't get to celebrate in San Francisco, but what did it mean to you? Because you'd been there for so much of it, and you'd seen so many of your friends that weren't coming home. What did it mean to you to find out that this war is over and that your side had won?
Well, a lot of the replacements that came, you know, I knew that they would be coming home and they wouldn't have any more fighting to do. And that was quite a relief. And after 2 weeks, it was kind of lonesome in Wood Lake because I was the first one that got discharged from the town. And I just missed my buddies, my acquaintances, that we developed such a close friendship, you know, with certain fellows in the service that you miss them. And I miss those fellows. But then you got adjusted, and life's been good to me. I thank God for bringing me back. I have experiences. The only time I discuss them is like you here interviewing me, and I'm glad that sometimes I might have been incoherent, but it was unprepared. You realize that?
I don't think anyone listening is going to call you incoherent. I think they're pretty amazed that you're as sharp as you are. 96 or 26. And since you are so sharp, maybe I should ask you this, because I think you have an understanding. You know what the 40th Infantry Division did. You know what your squad did. And you know what America did during that time. So when you think about that, so many of us weren't alive then, didn't experience it. What's important for us to know? What do we need to know about what you all did and why you did it?
Well, like I said in my first and start of an interview, it was an era of patriotism. But today there's been so many scrimmages and our country's in trouble and there's not enough patriotism. People wave a flag and a decal, but it's just like the boy that liked the game of football so well, but he didn't go out for the team because he hated to get his uniform dirty. You got to constantly keep fighting for freedom because the forces of evil take two steps forwards and then one step backwards. And then when you take one step backward, well, you think you're winning, but you're not, because they were already taking two steps forward, one ahead of you. And our country's in real trouble. And the only thing that can save us now is the Lord.
A lot of times, the veterans that I interview, they kind of bristle at the name of this program, Hometown Heroes, because they say, hey, I'm not a hero. I was just doing what I was asked to do. But when you think about World War II and how you experienced it, are there guys that you remember as heroes in your mind?
The Hustis brothers in my company, boy, they had a lot of valor. They were good men up front. They knew how to handle their platoons and all that. And, of course, I had a lot of good training from local guys like Sergeant Darcy, Sergeant Lee Cree. These guys knew the manual inside out. They'd make these second lieutenants for Fort Benning, Georgia, look sick with their knowledge. And I was always a good listener. The word got around that I knew a little bit, and I'm not boasting about it, but more than one officer told me that I was a very good speaker in analyzing the intricate phases of machine guns and rifles and all that. And maybe you might say I was a little vain, but I always took satisfaction in knowing something that most is dull to most other people. Instead of reading comics and so forth, I read economics, history. I think the history of my life is very important because I'm sort of self-made. I never had a formal education, but I was a deep thinker. My dad was well-educated in Spanish, and he always gave me good advice. He always took his hat off when the flag went by, and I grew with that heritage. I love my country, but I've been criticized because people tell me, oh, you hate America. I says, no, I dislike the people that are running it.
Anytime I interview someone who's your age, who's in the kind of shape and mental shape that you're in, I've got to ask you, what's your secret? What keeps you so young and so sharp? Is there something that you do that you can give the credit to?
Well, I'll be a little facetious. I told people I eat beans and tortillas, and they say, oh, no, you must eat something else. I never was a big eater, and I never was a boozer. Oh, I enjoy a cocktail and a beer, but I never was a smoker. So anyway, I had good heritage, even though we were poor, but we work hard. And hey, I have no regrets. I'm living in the greatest country in the world still. It's decaying rapidly, but we're still the best.
I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story, specifically with regard to the 40th Infantry Division. Is there something that you guys did over there that gives you great pride?
Well, I think so, because we took the island of Luzon. That was the biggest job we had. Of course, Negros was the time element that was so bad because we didn't have any facilities for 68 days. But I think Luzon would be the best because we had to work real hard and fight real hard and to get the enemy at the last out of the caves and so forth. It was tough. I think that Luzon was our biggest accomplishment.
So that was 70 years ago. As for today, tell me about Charlie and Friends. This is your five-piece band. You're the lead singer.
We play at different rest homes, like Quail, is where all the rich guys live. And we play here twice a month and once in a while at a wedding or reception. And I do the ad-libbing because I have a very good knowledge of the big bands, all the ballrooms and everything. And they say I still have a good voice. I don't know if that's true or not. We'll play anywhere for very little money. We do it just because we like to stay alive in our old age and still be able to entertain people. I like music very much. I like spiritual music. I sing in my church.
That's Faith Baptist Church in Visalia, if you want to catch them. But I know not all the people listening right now can catch you in person. And I said I'd try to have you sing for us. So I know it's a cappella, but what can you do for us here?
This is a number that I serenaded my wife on our 50th wedding anniversary. It's one of the last mementos of Frank Sinatra before he left the Tommy Dorsey Band and took a solo flight into the world of wax. It was just a neighborhood dance, that's all that it was, but oh, what it seemed to be. It was like a masquerade ball with costumes and all. 'Cause you were at the dance with me. It was just a ride on a train, that's all that it was, but oh, what it seemed to be. It was like a trip to the stars, to Venus and Mars, 'cause you were at the train with me. And when I kiss you, darling, it was more than just a thrill for me. It was a promise, darling, of the things that fate had will for me. It was just a wedding in June, that's all that it was, but oh, what it seemed to be. It was like a royal affair with everyone there, 'cause you said, yes, I do, to me.
How about that? I'm sure Nellie loved that on your 50th anniversary. Maybe Charlie and Friends is going to have some more bookings after that performance. Augustin Chavez, 96 years old, a man of strong convictions. And some of those convictions wouldn't quite fit into the time we have here on the radio. That bonus material is included in the podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. We're out of time, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.